Maine Calling's Your Vote 2020 coverage is brought to you by MEMIC, AARP of Maine, and the law offices of Joe Bornstein.
Independent candidate for U.S. Senate, Max Lynn. There are two independent candidates in the race for U.S. Senate in Maine, Lisa Savage and Max Lynn. Today on Maine Calling, we continue our series of interviews with the candidates, with one of those, Max Lynn of Bar Harbor. Lynn is a financial advisor who has run unsuccessfully for public office in the past in Florida and Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. I'll be joined today by Maine Public senior political reporter Mal Leary, and we will together ask many of the questions you have submitted for Max Lynn. We will not be taking any calls live during this broadcast, but you are welcome to submit your questions via Facebook, email, or Twitter. Our Your Vote 2020 Conversations with the Candidates continue next on Maine Calling. But first, this news. This is Maine Calling, and I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Co-hosting with me today, Maine Public's senior political analyst, Mal Leary. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2020 conversation with Max Lynn. He is an independent and one of four candidates on the ballot for U.S. Senate. We invite you to submit a comment or question for Max Lynn or any of the candidates. You can send that email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment on our Facebook page. You can also leave us a voicemail for future interviews by calling 207-370-3487. And as you may have noticed, Maine Calling is now broadcasting at 11 a.m. Please be sure to tune in each morning at 11. The rebroadcasts remain at 7 p.m. And one other programming note, for the rest of the week, we will be interviewing the other candidates for U.S. Senate. Next week, we'll speak with the candidates running for Maine's two congressional district seats. We will not be taking live calls during these interviews, but again, you can send a voicemail in advance, 370-3487. Max Lynn, thanks so much for joining us today, and we're going to start our questioning with Mal Leary.
Great. It's great to be on the show, and I'm really looking forward to the interview today.
Max, as you know, COVID-19 continues to claim lives here in Maine and across the world. Medical experts say one of the most effective defenses against the virus is wearing a mask. Yet you've opposed any sort of masking requirements. Where are you getting your medical advice?
Well, Mal, thank you for the question, and that's a misstatement on your part. So let me clarify that for all your listeners, and specifically you and Jennifer. I'm not against wearing the masks at all, first and foremost. So I want to make that crystal clear. In fact, if I enter someone's house or business and they request the mask, I'm the first one to wear it. So I'm always respectful of other people's opinions in regards to this virus. My protest of the mask was not so much protest of the mask itself or individuals requesting it, because I get that. My protest was that of government intervention and government overreach. So I want to make sure before we move on to any other subject that you and Jennifer are crystal clear on what I'm saying and what I'm protesting. Does that answer the question, or do I need to go into more detail?
Well, Max, my specific question said masking requirements. And requirement would mean federal government, state governments, whoever, requiring you to wear them. You've opposed that kind of requirement.
Right. Because, see, as someone who really has read many times and as an American history student, the Constitution and Bill of Rights, I'm first and foremost someone who believes in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And even though there's a lot of doctors who have said that masks do prevent the spread of the virus, there's arguably an equal amount of doctors who say that it doesn't. And the masks required, if you really want to look into the details, because I've personally talked to many groups of doctors that says you need an N95 or N95 mask. plus eye covering, and we can go on and on and on. And so a lot of people today are wearing homespun and homemade masks out of cloth and all kinds of different materials that, in fact, do not in any way, shape, or form hinder the spread of the virus. And so, but for clarity, that if I walk into someone's house or someone's businesses and they personally requested that, I would be respectful of that person's wishes. So I want to make sure I'm answering the questions. I'm not against masks. I'm against the government dictating to businesses who are essential businesses, who are non-essential, and the overriding what I call government overreach. And I believe, for example, here in Maine, I used to live up in the county, that one size doesn't fit all. And it sure doesn't fit it from the governor's office, and even more so, it doesn't fit it from the federal government's office down in Washington, D.C. And so I want to make sure, Mel, and your listeners are clear. I'm not an anti-mask guy. I'm an anti-government intervention, government overreach guy.
Max, I want to ask you, groups of doctors have told you that one must wear an N95 to be protected. Who are these doctors? We've interviewed many doctors on Maine Calling, and not a single one has said that. So can you tell us who has said that to you?
Well, you want me to list the name? I'm not going to go through the names. I'm just saying the facts.
Why not?
No, even because I choose not to. You own the questions. I own the answers. That's why not. And so you can be combative if you want, but if you'd like to do a nice interview, we can do that. So I'm not here to debate even Dr. Fauci, who has at times said masks are necessary and then masks are not. There's been, I mean, really, respectfully, but if you want to get, you know, aggressive, which I don't want to be with you, that there's been abundance of flip-flopping on this mask issue. And if you disagree with that, then you're just reading one side of it. I mean, that's not open for debate. There has been flip-flopping along the way since this all came out. So in clarity to Mal's question, I am not anti-mask. I'm anti-government intervention too much in our lives, and it's setting a precedent of government getting more and more involved. Remember, first and foremost, I'm not here of Max's opinion. I'm sitting here with the premise of our Constitution and Bill of Rights, where the government, the federal government, is supposed to be transparent, small, and weak, and the people are supposed to be private and strong. And unfortunately, what's happened during the last 30 or arguably 40 years is the government has become much stronger, more powerful, and private, and the people obviously now are getting very weak financially, and they want the people to be transparent. So my foundation is based on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
You have advised people, Max, to fill out their ranked choice ballot by, quote, ranking change first. I'm wondering, would you be running in this election if it were not a ranked choice election?
Yes, I would be, because it's not the ranked choice voting have me run. It's that why I'm running in the race is I see the continued debasement of our currency and what I feel is the American dream based on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the dreams and visions of our founders. I really think America is going in a wrong direction, and what's leading us down that way is our so-called leadership in both the Republican and Democratic Party. And, you know, then the voters, like both, you know, respectfully, both Jennifer, you and Mal have a choice. You can either say, you know, things are basically going fine in America, and I'm going to vote for more of the same, and that's your right to do that, and you vote for Sarah or Susan. But the voters, which include both of you, if you really want change, I can assure you, and I think you'd have to agree, you're not going to get it with a Speaker Gideon or a Senator Collins. You know, a lot of people in America and Maine want change in Washington, and I'm that vote. And so, irrelevant of ranked choice voting, I want to stand up and speak my mind on an economic basis, a value basis, and a constitutional basis. What I don't think is being addressed, and that's really what the American system's about: is people, individuals, citizens saying, "I want to serve, whether it's at the local, state, or national level, and I want to get in the game and run for office, and be heard." And it's very hard. What I've learned a lot out of this campaign. It's very hard to get my message out. So, number one, I apologize if I was a little aggressive with either of you, but and I thank you for interviewing me because I want to get my message out. And it's very hard to do that without spending the amount of money, an equal amount of money that my opponents are, but they're spending $100 million, but still with no solutions, no platforms. And it's a rigged system. And I mean, it's not an equal system. You know, it's a rigged system. The corporations write the legislation. They hand it to the lobbyists. The lobbyists, you know, solicit the members of Congress, and they get legislation passed that favors the corporation. And who gets left out is Jennifer, Mal, and Max, and the American people and the people of Maine. We get left out, which is evident because the corporations are making billions and trillions of dollars, and the American people, the middle class, is shrinking and getting left out. And now with this government intervention of putting small businesses out of business, this is very – people are losing their livelihoods and losing their businesses and losing their homes. And this is something that I want to stand up and fight against. It's that simple.
Mal.
Max, let's go back to COVID-19 because that is really an issue that is dominating a lot of folks because of the direct impact, both health-wise and economically. You've proposed a $5,000 payment as part of a help to stimulate the economy. This morning, the president tweeted another $1,200 in stimulus payments. Why did you come up with 5,000? What's the magic number there?
Well, what I look at is, let me clarify again, and again, I'm just so appreciative that you two are having me on your show, that the $5,000 is for Maine residents only. And let me clarify that first and foremost, as a certified financial planner, someone who has their wheelhouse and their career and profession in finance and economics, I am against the bailouts. Okay, let me repeat. I am against the bailouts. It's going to cripple America. It's going to cripple the middle class and the poor, and it's going to be very detrimental. And we're going to pay a very big price for these bailouts. The bailouts are wrong. But I'm running for U.S. Senate. I'm not running for all-powerful, I make decisions my way. So first and foremost, I'm against the bailouts. But whether we like them or not, which I don't, they're going to keep coming because the so-called conservative Republican Party, the party of small government, the party of fiscal responsibility, has basically said, we're giving all that up and we want multi-trillion dollar bailouts. And Trump comes along and says, no, we even need to bail out more. So we have no conservative, or should I say, fiscally conservative party in Washington. Those days are gone and they're not going to come back. In fact, if we look at the Republican spending proposal, they came and said, let's take the Bernie Sanders platform, multiply it times 100 and spend trillions. And so the Democrats have said, wow, the Republicans are fiscally irresponsible into the tunes of trillions of dollars. Let's take a complete other step and go towards $3 or $4 trillion. So there is no fiscal responsibility. Knowing that I'm against the bailouts, they're going to keep coming. That is undeniable, unassailable, in my opinion. So if we're going to have the bailouts, I want to go after the money, and I don't want it to go to big corporations. I want it going to the people who have been adversely affected the most. And there's two categories there. Small businesses nationwide, because I want $500 billion for small businesses nationwide. But to answer your question, Mal, the $5,000 is for Maine families only, because we can debate the fact that how adversely Maine residents have been hurt. I think the internet says it's in the top three. I argue that it's the number one state in the country that's been adversely affected because of our dependency on tourism. So I want to go after $5,000 per Maine family and $500 billion for small businesses nationwide. Because right now I read an article recently that upwards of 50 or 55,000 Maine families could be evicted from their homes on the rent or the mortgages they're paying. So I'm representing Maine. I'm not representing corporate America. You know, my opponents are representing. It's a rigged system. They have to represent. They can't be independent. I would love to see Sarah and Susan run as independents and not with the party, so you can see who they really are. But they're not allowed to be themselves. These are very capable candidates. but they're in a rigged system that is corporate America.
Max, when I researched your background, of course, the financial planner is important. That's why I was trying to get at, is there some economic reason that 5,000 works and 1,200 doesn't?
Well, yes. I mean, because for Maine families, where people are losing their homes, 50,000 people are going to lose their homes. You can pull it up on the internet. This is not some fictitious number. That's what the research shows, that these Maine families are going to be homeless, and $1,200 doesn't put food on the table, pay the rent, pay the electric bill, and pay everything that's needed. And the cost of oil keeps going, you know, it's low now, but the cost of heating oil. So I'm here as a U.S. Senate candidate for the state of Maine. So I can assure you, when there's trillions of dollars in bailout money, I am going after it for Mainers. And $1,200, yes, I'm a financial planner, and how I come up with that number is $1,200 doesn't get you out of the hole you're in of losing your home. The suicides are up, the drug addiction's up, the abuse in the households, the domestic violence is up. These are facts that cannot be denied. And Maine is getting hammered financially. I argue the number one state adversely affected by what's going on right now is the lovely, beautiful state of Maine and Mainers, who are good, hardworking people. And that's why, you know, I put together what I call the Maine workers ticket, in this, especially for the second district. Okay, we need to stop the sellout of our working families. That's why I'm saying vote Trump for president, Lynn for U.S. Senate, and Jared Golden for U.S. Congress. The Maine workers ticket is very important to me, because these are Maine families in the second district that are used to hard work, and all these factories they've been sold out with both the Republican and Democratic Party during the last 30 years. And Americans, all the jobs are going. I mean, look what's happening. I don't know you two, but look what's happening to our great country. And look what's happening to the great state of Maine. People are hurting. And yeah, I want $5,000. And you know what's happening? While they get $5,000, the mega global corporations are getting hundreds of billions of dollars. And you know what they're doing with it? They're creating more debt. They're taking big golden parachute payouts. It's horrible what's going on in this country. And you're damn right I'm running for office, because I want to put up a good fight to say Americans and Mainers deserve better.
Well, Max, let's follow up on that thought. You believe corporations have too much influence in politics. What specific legislation would you propose to change that would be supported by the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, the Supreme Court doesn't have to do anything with breaking up the corporations. I stand right
behind
Elizabeth Warren.
Citizens United in mind, what legislation could Congress write that upon challenge would not, in your view, be overturned and would be effective?
It would be breaking up of the multinational corporations, right behind Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I agree. That's the funny thing. As an independent, I agree with many things the Democrats say, and I disagree with other things. I agree with many things the Republicans say. I just don't agree down the line. And I think that rings a bell with Americans and Mainers. So many times you sit with a group of Republicans who say, I'm a Republican, but I don't agree with everything the Republican Party stands for. And I have many Democratic friends. I have many Democrats working on my campaign that say, you know, I'm a Democrat. I can't jump on board with the Republicans, but I don't agree with everything the Democrats say. In this area, I agree right with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. You need to break up the monopolies, which are the big corporations, and the Supreme Court would stand behind that.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're speaking with U.S. Senate candidate Max Lynn. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from MEMIC. With a mission to improve workforce safety and injury management, and a goal of sending millions back to the Maine economy. The law offices of Joe Bornstein, Maine lawyers committed to working for Maine people since 1974. Learn more at joebornstein.com. And AARP Maine, providing information on voting from home with absentee ballots. aarp.org/mainevotes.
Kamala Harris says Americans have been lied to.
The case against Donald Trump and Mike Pence is open and shut.
The vice president is eager to dispute that.
My message to the Democrat candidate for vice president, congratulations. I'll see you in Salt Lake City.
Join NPR tonight for special live coverage of the vice presidential debate, plus recaps and analysis tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
And that's tonight at 9 o'clock on both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Television.
I'm Tanya Mosley. As part of our series on American food, we explore the love of the taco with Javier Cabral, editor-in-chief of LA Taco.
No matter where you're from and no matter how much the city changes, the one constant will always be tacos and, most importantly, the desire to know where to find the best ones.
That's next time on Here and Now.
And Here and Now is coming up at noon here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, Max Lynn is a candidate for the U.S. Senate, and he is our guest. He joins me and Maine Public senior political correspondent Mal Leary for a conversation about why he's running and his stance on the issues that matter most to Mainers. Share your comments and questions. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment on our Facebook page. Please note, we are not taking calls during today's program. Mal, another question from you before we go to audience questions.
Max, big concern about access to health care. A lot of it driven by COVID-19, but it's been a major issue for several years now. What do you think should be done to provide access to health care for all Americans? Do you want to repeal the Affordable Care Act as President Trump has proposed?
And again, an excellent question. And let me share with you, Mal, and Jennifer, and all your viewers, that healthcare is one of my areas of expertise. I don't have a lot of them, but it is most assuredly in finance and healthcare, and it happens to be immigration. The healthcare crisis, as a certified financial planner when I was in my practice for over 20 years, pretty much exclusively, my clients were retired people. That was my business. 95 or 98% of my business was retirees. And what is so wrong in our medical system right now is, as we get older, healthcare becomes a part of our life. It becomes a monthly, weekly, and sometimes daily part of our life as we get older, because as we get older, we need more and more attention with doctors. That's just the reality of aging. And under no conditions is it ever right for someone who has been a member of society to get older when you need medical care and be in jeopardy of losing their savings or their home. And I realize that it is a major argument between the Republicans and Republicans and Democrats. That's where I feel, as an independent, I can be a build bridger, building bridges besides tearing them down. And it seems like the Republicans and Democrats are always fighting over this. But to answer your question, one size doesn't fit all. If we sit with Obamacare, we're going to argue. And if we eliminate it, we're going to argue. So there has to be cooperation between the two parties. And we see in Washington, we don't get that. That's where I think I can build bridges in the healthcare program and do a hybrid and say, no individuals, especially who are retired or anybody in America, should lose their savings or their homes because they get sick, whether it's a new illness or pre-existing. So that has to be covered with a combination government-sponsored but also private sector program. What the two parties never talk about, and again, I stand very strong on this, is an area of expertise with me because I've lived it my adult life with people who are in the healthcare programs as retirees, but you need tort reform. Again, I've sat with groups of doctors. They've been my clients. I've sat on boards of hospitals. And without a doubt, what these doctors are faced with every year and every day is they have to do these tests. And I've been told by groups of doctors, and I don't think a doctor I don't think there's one that'll disagree that the doctors have to do a lot of tests. And if you get them alone, they'll say a lot of these tests they do are unnecessary, but they have to do it to protect themselves from liability. And to do that, they also have to buy insurance. because they can get sued. So this liability insurance very often goes into the literally millions of dollars in cost to them. So what gets passed through is these outrageous medical expenses. So to answer your question, we need a hybrid system that is a combination of private and government, and we need tort reform. Without the tort reform, but neither the Republican or Democratic Party will address tort reform. There can't be an unlimited. You need to lower the overhead of doctors, and you can't do this any way except through tort reform. And specifically with Maine, I used to live in the county. A lot of people don't know that. I've spent more time in the county than any other place in Maine. And these people who have their local doctors, they've been going to their local doctors, sometimes multi-generational on both sides. And so what you have is you need an infrastructure in rural America and rural Maine where these doctors can have teledoctoring or telemedicine, where you can go to your local doctor, but if you have an acute illness that it needs a specialist, that doctor and you can get on a conference video and say, here's the specialist, whether the specialist is in New York or Boston or a major city, which a lot of them are in. So you need a combination of access to these medical doctors, but you can't get it in rural Maine or rural America without a built infrastructure. And that's my argument. What in the heck, respectfully, of Speaker Gideon and Susan Collins, who have been in combined Maine politics for over 50 years, why don't we have that? Okay, I don't get that. It's so important. Medical is so important. And why don't we have a fixed medical system? And why we have is we have too much partisanship in Washington, D.C. And I feel very confident in saying this. It will never be fixed. It'll until we get independent people in office who aren't party people, you know, ringing the bells for the party. Because Sarah and Susan, respectfully, if one of them win, they don't have any power. They're just going to be assigned to some subcommittee, and all the influence goes to, in the Democratic side, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and on the Republican side, Mitch McConnell. And I don't think any of the Republican or Democratic leadership care a damn about Portland, Maine, much less rural Maine. On the other hand, me as your U.S. senator, whether it's a Biden administration or a Trump administration, they will have to come to Maine to get legislation passed. Maine, with me in office, becomes the most influential state, arguably, in the country, more influential than Florida, Texas, and California together. And that's 6 years of Maine influence, which will make Maine one of the wealthiest states in the country, wealthier than they've ever been, with more money coming to Maine with me in office, not Sarah or Susan.
We're going to go to one of the voicemails that came in before the program.
Rachel from Westbrook, Maine. Do you feel that corporate hired lobbyists help Maine voters? And would you be willing to reform the system into one that did not allow corporate money and influence into government in any way?
Well, that's the base of my campaign. That's a cornerstone of my whole campaign. And to Rachel and the rest of your listeners and to Mal and Jennifer, this is not going to change under our current system of a rigged and broken Republican and Democratic Party. It has to come from people who are running that saying, I'm not beholden to big corporate interests or big corporate Republican and Democratic parties, because that's really what the two parties have turned into. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to go to another voicemail. Go ahead.
Yeah.
My name is Wayne Griffith Hurst. I'm from Charleston, Maine. I am a senior citizen on Social Security. For 3 years, we never got a pay raise. When we did get a pay raise, it was only 1% to 2%. That is not much. The pay raise is based on the consumer price index. When it is low, seniors do not get a pay raise. The other thing is when seniors get a pay raise, our Medicare goes up 10%. This takes all of the pay raise. What would you do to fix the Social Security pay raise to make it more fair for everyone? Thank you very much.
And thank you for an excellent question. Well, to begin with, that's one reason why I want the $5,000 per Maine resident. And number two, what the voter is saying is that he's not treated fairly. And he's right. That is because he's not represented in Washington, D.C. Who is represented is the big corporations. And it is not the senators and Congress people who write the legislation anymore. Our legislation is exclusively written by big corporations, handed to the lobbyists, and the lobbyists solicit the congressional representatives to put the legislation into law. We're not our representative system isn't representing the people. It's representing big corporations, and that's what I stand against.
I'm going to go to Lauren, and here's her post on Facebook. I am agreeing with a lot of the points you're making. However, how can you back Trump? He's the antithesis of a lot of the points you've been bringing up, especially on bailouts. You have lost a potential vote for me due to your affiliation with, quote, Trump strong.
Right. An excellent question. You know, Trump is not my end all and be all. And there's many things that I disagree with President Trump. And there's many things as your next U.S. senator that I'll hold his feet to the fire with. So I am not a Trump rubber stamp. But I'm given the choice between Trump and Biden. And given that choice, I'm supporting Trump. Now, I look at the two candidates as all Mainers are looking at the candidates in this race. And there are some things, and that's the nice thing. As me, as your next U.S. senator, I will have the influence, as Maine will, to hold Trump, if he's our next president, if he is. We don't know that. But I'll be able to hold his feet to the fire on many things, like his irresponsibility on bailouts. I'm against bailouts. His irresponsibility on the environment. There's many things I'm against. But at my heart, I'm a financial planner. I'm a fiscal conservative. And even though he is not, and the Republican Party is not fiscally conservative, they're more than, in my opinion, than the Biden administration, who is even going off the deep end to spend and print more money.
Mal?
When you talk about the future of Social Security, don't you have to talk about making some structural changes as well, particularly from your background as a financial planner? It seems that, for example, having that arbitrary cap where people reach $137,000 in income, they no longer pay Social Security, even though they will be able to draw on it.
Right. Well, again, you know, at the core of my campaign, we have to put seniors as a priority as we get older, not only in healthcare, but in finances. And I'm absolutely against taxing Social Security. And, you know, what we're talking about so much, and I really appreciate your good questions that both of you are delivering. This is by no means a softball interview. And the tougher the questions, the more thought-provoking, the better I like it. But I think we all agree that Washington is not firing on all cylinders for we the people. And my argument is we know that there are solutions that can help the seniors and their health care and their finances, but we're not going to get it from a rigged and broken system that we have right now that are dominated by the Republican and Democratic Party, who are responsible first and foremost to their paymasters, which are big corporations writing the legislation. And it seems like we have, I almost call it automatons of representatives that are focused only on the reelection and the reelection for life. Until we get men and women in Washington who are not beholden to big corporations, who want to go there with the principal thing is to serve the people of America, until we get that, we can't hope for change. Because the system, we, all three of us on this show right now, we can agree that something's broken on Washington. But how do we fix it? We don't fix it by bringing the same people who have been there for 10, 20, 30, 40, or 50 years. We can't do it because and by the way, the system is working very well for corporate America. It's just not working very well for rural America and mainstream America. So we have to get people nationwide that aren't beholden to the big money for your campaign. Because if someone gives, I mean, let's face it, they're spending upwards of $100 million, still no solutions, no answers. But they, when they go to Washington, if Susan or Sarah win, they get assigned to a committee, and who gains all the influence? The leadership in the Republican or Democratic Party. And they're not going to make changes because they're beholden to their paymasters of hundreds of billions of dollars that goes into politics. And doesn't come from Mainers, and it doesn't come from Americans. It comes from big multinational corporations.
We're going to go to another quick break. Oh, yeah. Mal, hold your thought, and we'll come to you right after the – go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I just – hold your thought. We'll go to that right after the break. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from AARP Maine, providing information on voting from home with absentee ballots. AARP.org/MaineVotes. The Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, a statewide practice representing injured and disabled Mainers since 1974. JoeBornstein.com. And MEMIC, with a mission to improve workforce safety and injury management, and a goal of sending millions back to the Maine economy.
The schooner Bessie Parker, sailing from St. John, New Brunswick to New York with a load of lath, shipwrecked 1.5 miles south of the West Quoddy Lifesaving Station, driven ashore by heavy winds and high seas on October 7, 1906. The first life-saving station in the area was established by the United States Life-Saving Service, a predecessor to the Coast Guard, in 1874, and was one of 5 such stations in Maine. It was located at Carrying Point Cove on the south side of West Quoddy Head, a relatively exposed location. The present facility was built by the Coast Guard in 1919 to replace that one and was in active service until 1972.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Bernstein Scher and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine! The Maine Conservation Voters and Maine Conservation Alliance recently hosted their annual Evening for the Environment event. This year, the event was held online and featured many prominent Mainers, including Governor Janet Mills and Senator Angus King. Speaking in Maine has both the audio and a link to the visual recordings of the event at mainepublic.org. Please click on Radio drop-down in the top navigation bar, and then Speaking in Maine.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, and Maine Public's Mal Leary is on the line with us today. Our program, a Your Vote 2020 discussion with Max Lynn, running as an independent for U.S. Senate. If you'd like to join the conversation, please be quick. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. Mal Leary, you wanted a follow-up question to Max Lynn's last comment. Go ahead.
Yes, Max. Is term limits part of your solution to try to get a broader representation in Congress?
Oh, yeah, most assuredly. I've been a term limit. You can Google my name, put Max Lynn plus term limits. I don't think there's many people in the country that have fought longer on a national basis for effective and meaningful term limits. We absolutely need that. We need new, fresh ideas and fresh blood both in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And that's why, as an independent, I can tell you what I like about the Democratic Party. I can tell you what I like about the Republican Party, and equally tell you what I don't like about both. But term limits is absolutely essential. In fact, it's just not a my idea. This is our founding fathers. If you really read, and they were just such penmen back then. They wrote everything down. They argued so much about our Constitution, and they even argued if we need a Bill of Rights. But no one supported term limits stronger than our founding fathers. Their whole idea, their concept, none of them disagreed on that. But they didn't call it term limits. They called it rotation in office. Politics in plenty was their quote. We need rotation in office was their quote. And I think ranked choice voting is at least a step in that direction. We see Americans and Mainers, it's so clear, Mal, on this election, they can vote for more of the same. And a lot of people might want that. I get that. They want more of the same. I think it's a minority, and you can get that with Senator Collins or Speaker Gideon, or they can vote for change, which is a vote for Max Lynn. And I think ranked choice voting is at least a step and puts a fly in the ointment of the establishment and the political class. And that's what I think America needs to do. Enough is enough. We see what we have. We see what experience has gotten us. We see what the career politicians have brought us. It's reelect me for life, and I get my funding from the big major multinational corporations, which is true. I mean, my goodness, think about it. $100 million, still no answers, still no solutions. What could that $100 million have done in the state of Maine for infrastructure, for healthcare, and for the state of Maine? Instead, we've got 30-second commercials that are bickering and fighting, telling each other how bad they are with no solutions. I come with real solutions on healthcare, on tort reform, on immigration, on environment, the CMP corridor. I'm the only one standing on that, on term limits. I'm coming with real solutions to real problems. They aren't, because they're with big corporations. And it's sad. They are very capable, smart opponents.
Lots of they're questions just, coming in. Going to try to get to a few more of these before we run out of time. This one is from Gretchen. Earlier this year, I received a phone call asking me to verify that I had signed a petition to get Max Lynn on the ballot. The signature was recorded at a gun show in Bangor. I've never been to a gun show, and I hadn't been to Bangor in years. How did the Lynn organization get my name, phone number, and signature on that nomination petition? What is his campaign doing about fraud within its ranks? Who is responsible? And what does that have to say about unethical campaign tactics?
Right. Well, there's been nothing unethical in under this watch that I have. What happens is we have a system of the Maine has a system of gathering signatures, and those are supposed to be filtered by the town clerks. And we have volunteers, some people for hire, some people volunteering, and you gather names. And that's what the town clerk is supposed to filter through and check those names. And if people are signing things, you know, we gathered upwards of 6,000 signatures. And the fact is it goes through the process, and there's always on everybody's signatures, there's names taken off and crossed out. At the highest level of ethics as a certified financial planner, that's what we don't have with our current system. We know that ethics and more and ethics at the top of the Republican and Democratic ladder don't exist. That's what I want to bring to Washington. So it's very sad that people would question, quote, my ethics on signature gathering. We do the absolute best job we can. We try to monitor everything, but sometimes people are paid to gather signatures, and there might be some things going on where signatures are forged out. Well, we try to eliminate that and keep it to a minimal, but unfortunately, when people are incentivized with money, just like our elected officials, they don't always do what they should.
Mal?
I find it interesting that this call, came up, I believe, on Facebook, Jennifer. The question becomes, Max, do you think that the process needs to be changed? Should there be greater controls over who's doing those petition circulations, circulating those petitions, and the whole process of verification?
Again, just an outstanding question and something now that I have experience in, Mal, and the answer is most assuredly yes. The signature gathering process, in my opinion, is clearly a way to keep new people out. Because it's such a high bar, it's such a hurdle for new people. And I speak with, believe me, a lot of firsthand experience with scars on my back from getting whipped on this, that the incumbent has such an unfair advantage, not only in the election process already, thus my opponents have raised $100 million with no solutions, no answers, but in the signature gathering, it's a big block for people. Because what has to happen, and I speak from experience, is you have to find people, volunteers, or you pay people to go get this very onerous signature gathering. And it really blocks people from getting in, who want to run for office, from getting into office. And who it's easy for is the current incumbents or the political class. Because what happens is once you're in office, you're going to have, of course, people who dislike you, but you have people who like you. So it's very easy to go to 100 volunteers and say, please, you know, each get me 100 signatures. But when you're coming from just a business person or from the private sector, it's very onerous. And you can ask Tiffany Bond that should be on the ballot. I believe, like our founding fathers, I want politicians in plenty. I want turnover. And this signature gathering is so onerous, it prohibits good Mainers from getting on the ballot.
Okay, we're going to go to another voicemail.
Hi, this is Ginny from South Portland, and I would like to know what the policy is for Iran that the Senate candidates would like to put forward. Thank you.
Right, an excellent question, and I'm very opinionated on the whole Middle East. I think it has been an illegal war for 20 years, and I would bring all the troops home. That's an easy answer. We have bankrupt this country. Well, we're bankrupting it more now by printing trillions, but it was already bankrupt on these wars, endless and meaningless wars for 20 years. And I think we have to hold people who brought us to the war. We got to bring them to court and for potential war crimes. So this has been horrendous. It has displaced tens of millions of people in the Middle East. It's killed millions of people in the Middle East. It's bankrupt America, and it's injured countless amounts, countless Americans that are disabled. I think the veteran suicide rate is up to 20 or 25 per day. This is horrible. This is the longest war in American history.
Sure, Mel, but Ginny wasn't asking about Afghanistan or Iraq. She's asking about Iran.
Iran, leave them alone. Withdraw the sanctions. Thank you. I stand corrected. But I look at that as the whole ongoing Middle East. I would be very against any administration putting more sanctions, any sanctions, or more war. So I'd say leave them alone. Leave them the heck alone. And let's focus on America. We have enough problems right here. We don't have to be everybody's policeman and everybody's dictator. Let's focus on America first.
Okay, email from Zachary. Where do you stand on social issues like abortion?
Abortion. Number one, I am a Christian. Okay. Number two, in my family, I choose pro-life. But saying that, I'm respectful of the separation of church and state, and I would never legislate a woman's right to choose. That's between that woman, her doctor, her family, and her God. So I stand personally pro-life, but I'd never legislate any of my personal religious views.
Mal?
When you look at some of these hot-button issues, obviously guns come to mind as well. Do you believe there are any sort of quote-unquote gun control measures that you could support?
No. No, I'm at the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and I think what's happened in our inner cities, you know, we now know they're an abysmal mess of it's just what it is. And now we have, I think, one of the most important things in a society is a civil society. And we're talking about in the inner cities, they're ripping down our monuments. They're ripping down our heritage. They want to defund police. And to answer your gun situation, my goodness, you know, how many numerous calls have we seen now of people calling the police and they don't get a response or a delayed response? Americans, first and foremost, must be able to defend themselves. So I am at the strongest point of supporting the Second Amendment. And I'm the only candidate, and this is going to be a controversial one, and I've said it, but I'll say it on your show. I support tax credits and tax deductions on purchasing firearms, but with that has to come regular classes on the use of guns. So tax deductions and tax credits for the purchase of guns, but it has to come with at least an annual, if not a biannual, going to certified classes on the safeties of using these guns.
Alex on Facebook, does Lynn support the Safe Banking Act for medical marijuana companies in Maine?
Yeah. I am pro marijuana, not only in Maine but nationwide. This has been ridiculous. We're locking people up. We're ruining families, and this is a way that the governments can receive revenues without taxing the people to death. So I am a strong supporter of legalized marijuana and the banks. We should be able to bank with companies. In fact, I've been looking actively into having my own marijuana business here in Maine, and I'm appalled that you can't have bank accounts.
Mal?
I'd like to go back a minute to the question you had on Iran and to broaden it out, because one of the most important decisions a United States senator or a member of Congress and at all has is, when do we go to war? Are there criteria by which you would judge when we go to war?
It was one of the, as an avid American history student, I forget what president said it or who said it, might have been Supreme Court justice, but the definition of war, and I support this, the definition of war is 100% failed foreign policy. War is a last, death and war and destruction is a last choice. And what we have right now over the last year, 20 years, watching both the Republicans and Democrats at the helm, is there has been no case for war. So, there is a case, and I would think that if you were actually attacked.
All right. If you're attacked.
Such as 9/11?
Well, I don't think we did the proper investigations of who attacked us in 9/11. I think the whole 9/11 was a absolute fiasco, because we do know now we went to war under false information. We went to war. The fact is that I'm very current with this because I've been an anti-war guy all my life. But I'm the first one to say, let's defend ourselves. But the fact is we went to war based on weapons of mass destruction. And President Bush even joked about it at the correspondence dinner saying, where are those weapons? Laughing. I'd like to bring the Bush administration and have them tried for war crimes. So I'm not Mr. Republican. This is horrible. The whole damn administration needs to be tried for war crimes. Well, now, whether they're guilty or not, I'd let a court decide. But we are now in a 20-year war based on false and untrue allegations, and no one's been called. Our intelligence hasn't been called to task. Nobody has. And the system won't do it, because if they start bringing people to court, they'll start pointing fingers, and we get to the bottom of that. And also, I don't know how old you two are, but the Vietnam War, false. We now know that McNamara testified before he passed away that, you know, what led us into the Vietnam War was an attack in the Gulf of Tonkin. And he now says we were never attacked. It was a bold-faced lie. So I am sick and tired of the United States power structure being controlled by international interests lying to the American people.
Max, that has to be the last word. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're out of time. Max Lynn, running as an independent for U.S. Senate. Tomorrow we continue our series of Your Vote 2020 candidate interviews. Mal and I will be speaking with Democrat Sarah Gideon tomorrow. The phone number for a voicemail, 207-370-3487. Before we leave air today, we have to say to Mal, happy birthday. Today's sound engineer, Lucy Suchek. Our program is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.